Hello and welcome to the podcast, What We Teach Our Children. I'm Kim Clyden. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent and empowered children? And they say it takes a village, or what we might call today a community. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. We're surrounded though by people who can support us, your family, friends and professionals, who all play an influential role in shaping our children. Imagine if your parents, teachers, relatives or carers told you another story. Your life story would be completely different. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. This podcast is about everyone who plays a role in that story at every level of society. The importance of education and its benefits for children and young adults is widely recognised globally. A good education provides social and emotional development, prospects for employment, national economic outcomes, and improved health rates, whilst fostering confidence, creativity, curiosity, and problem solving, all relevant to human evolution and survival. When we deliver learning with a one-size-fits-all approach, there are bound to be individual challenges. According to Dr. Catherine Murray, young developing brains vary in their capacity, emotional intelligence, and comprehension. Therefore, they require adapted learning environments to accommodate those individual needs. Now, as the creator of an early childhood pedagogy grounded in research and over 40 years of personal education experience, she credits the BrainSet environments formula with the ability to provide more equitable outcomes. Dr. Catherine Murray, I'd love to welcome you to What We Teach Our Children. I'm excited to get to know you, and I really wanted to understand what it was about your past experiences and career that led you to where you are now.
I'll try and shorten the long version. When I was born, my brain was swollen and my head was much bigger, and my parents were taken to the closest city, and the doctors there said, well, this little baby of yours that is now 3 days old is either going to be brain damaged and need to be in some sort of institution or she'll die. There's no other choices. So you can either take her home and watch her die, or we can put her into an institution now where she'll be cared for. And they chose to take me home. And fortunately they did, because I grew. My milestones were a little bit slower because I did have this brain injury at birth, but I ended up being okay, and here I am. And so as I got older, I've always had an interest in the brain, of course, because I wondered how that happened. For myself, I became a teacher, and I was a classroom teacher for 25 years. Then I went on to academia and started teaching pre-service teachers, you know, teaching people how to be a teacher in early childhood and primary education. And then I went and worked for a consultancy organisation here in Australia, and then left that and decided to start my own consultancy. And that's where Future Strong Education came from. Over time, I have done continued research. And there was a huge body of research around the environment, the built environment that we work in, that we learn in, and a huge amount of information about neuroscience, but no one had put them together. And I speak a lot at conferences and keynotes and workshops and do all sorts of things like that. And I was talking about the connection between the environment and the brain, and how, you know, the environment that we're in always influences how we think, feel and act. But it wasn't until I read an article one day at a coffee shop, and it all came together for me, and BrainSet was born. And the BrainSet environments formula is all about setting up the environment and the way you teach, the relationships you build with children, the way you help them to self-regulate their behaviours. It's all about that. And it relates to the three levels of the brain that I've sort of teased out. And the three levels are S, survival, the survival part of the brain, which is in the brainstem. And then the E is for the emotional part of the brain in the limbic system, which is just near your ear. And then the T is the neocortex in the top part of your brain, and that's the thinking. So we've got brain set, S-E-T, as we go up the brain. And when I'm training teachers all over the world or talking to parents, I talk to them about these levels of the brain and how we must, as adults, do all that we can to make sure that children experience that sense of safety to start with. So we work from the bottom of the brain up. And then we make sure that they're feeling safe, they feel loved, they feel wanted, they're willing to take a risk in their learning or try out new and different things, because that's how we grow and develop. And when those two are harmonized, we can think clearly. And the mantra that we go with is a calm brain is a thinking brain. So if we can calm the brain, well, then we can think clearly, and then our memory is better and our decision-making is better, communication is better, problem-solving is better. We just have a better opportunity for thinking and learning. The tricky part with that is if children have experienced trauma, or any of us, because, hello, we've all got a brain, so this works for all of us. The tricky part is if we've experienced trauma, it doesn't take much for cortisol to be released in the top part of the brain, in this neocortex, in the thinking part of the brain. And when that happens, we have a foggy brain. So we can still think, we can still talk, we can still make decisions, but not as easily and not as effectively. And often it's, you know, it's those situations where you walk away from speaking to somebody and it might have been a bit of a threatening situation, and or you just were underprepared and you felt under threat. So you walk away and then you start to think of all the things that you should have said in that conversation. And why didn't I think of this? And why didn't I do this? It's because the cortisol level flooded the top part of your brain and you ended up with boggy brain and you just couldn't think as clearly as what you normally would. And that's what we try and relieve for young children in our early childhood classrooms. And the same concept applies for young children, older children, people in the workplace. I'm starting to do a bit of work now with and talk about their workplaces and their productivity of their employees, because it relates to all of us. So that's what I do. So, and along with that, I do a bit of parenting session. I do some parenting sessions and parenting advice. I write a lot of things. I've had a lot of things published about BrainSet, and I just love it.
When you're working with teachers and parents and all types of people who come into contact with children, are there common challenges that your work has been able to provide a solution for?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I was doing a coaching session with a group of teachers in Bolivia in South America. And the common thing is, and speaking to a group of teachers yesterday, more locally, the common theme is behaviour. How do we support children's behaviour and how do we help them to manage their own behaviour? Now, BrainSet does that, because part of the concepts are covered in three pillars of design that I've created and 16 elements of design. And those 16 elements of design are things that we need to have in place throughout the room, throughout our classroom. One of them is having multiple defined spaces in our room, and I mean small defined spaces. So it might just be a little space in the corner for one child. It might be another little space with some maybe some plants or something to break up those spaces and divide them up, or it might just be a mat on the floor with some cushions. But we define the space in a particular way, and then those spaces are just big enough for 1, 2, 3, 4 children maybe 6 children in the construction space, which traditionally is where we would have the biggest space, because as teachers, we think, oh, you know, all the children like to use the block, so we'll make that the big space. So there could be 15 children traditionally. I break that down and say, no, let's only have 6 there. If you've got lots of children who like that particular space, then you have 2 of them, and then put added things in there so that children are developing different skills, but in sort of in the same vein. Now, the purpose of that is that children aren't as threatened. They'll be more focused on the materials that have been placed in those spaces. They're more likely to talk. So oral language opportunities are increased. Behaviour issues are decreased because we have these multiple small defined spaces that are laced with children's interests. So the teacher cleverly designs this, and this is part of the BrainSet planning and then evaluating the learning. So there's a whole process that goes along with this. So it doesn't matter what ability level the children are or what age the children are, they can go into these defined spaces and they can have a successful experience because they've been carefully created.
Given the scope of public schooling, have you faced challenges trying to introduce this in public schools?
I usually start in the early childhood centres. So it might be kindergarten or it might be daycares, some sort of early childhood space. it's successful there, of course. And then normally the primary school or the elementary school, whichever part of the hemisphere you're in, they see that there's a degree of success there. So they want to bring it more into alignment with the older children. Because it changes a little bit when we get to like grade three, because children's brains have developed a little bit more and we can expect more from them. And so things in the environment change a little bit because the brain has matured and the brain has changed. I think with primary schools and elementary schools, there's so much pressure to achieve benchmarks that people are a little tentative to go ahead and do that. However, in Bolivia, when I was there in September training the teachers there, it started off at kindergarten and went into grade one. And when I was working with all of those teachers, the grade three and the grade five teachers came and said, well, can you help me with my room too? Because we'd like to do this. And then people from the high school came and said, well, can you help me with my room too? So it ended up being, you know, bigger than Ben-Hur in that space. And they were a little more open to that. And I'm not sure about the comparison of the regulations and expectations there and here. Some schools are more open to it. Some schools do it in a smaller sort of way. So they might have a couple of spaces in their room, because we can do that too. We can do it gradually and just have, you know, a couple of these defined spaces in a grade one classroom or grade two classroom and sort of ease into it. The thing that I get a little concerned about, though, is if we're offering children this very open, playful learning sort of approach in the early childhood years, so, you know, childcare, let's say, and then they're going into a more formalised situation where they have to sit at desks much more of the day and the learning is much more structured. Just because we have Christmas holidays, it doesn't mean that children have developed enough over those Christmas holidays to move from kindergarten into prep, or even from prep into grade one, and have a more formalised sort of structure. So my advice to those more formalised settings is, at least in the first term, loosen up a little and let them have some of these, you know, playful learning spaces, these defined learning spaces that are carefully curated, and they are designed to build skills and build knowledge and all the academic things that go along with it, as well as all of the human skills that we want. So resilience and cooperation and collaboration and the oral language, which, as we know, is a precursor to reading and writing. So all of that is really important. So let's just continue that into the first term of grade one at least. And then we can sort of remove some of the defined spaces in the room, and it can start to move into the more structured approach if that's what the school is comfortable with. But I think we need to be relying more on the needs of the child rather than the needs of the curriculum. Because after all, we teach children. We don't teach curriculum. Well, we shouldn't. We should be teaching children.
A big thing that's become quite the coined phrase in the last generation is emotional intelligence. What role does that play in some of the behaviours, and how can we encourage our children to become more emotionally intelligent from home?
Great question. And that's another area that I often speak about, is emotional intelligence, because we want to be role modeling to children how to be aware of themselves. And, oops, I made a mistake. Oh, I'll just try again. And, you know, we want to build that up. So we want to do all of these talk aloud sort of strategies so that children are learning from us. We want to be modeling as teachers and parents. We want to be modeling respectful conversations and being compassionate and concerned, and you know, build their confidence and give them opportunities to shine. And that's what happens in the brain set classroom. The children have the opportunity to shine, and they develop these social and emotional skills, because one of the byproducts of having many small defined spaces in a room where there's only room for one child, two children, three children, there's not always space for me to go into that area. So I have to wait. And that can be hard for some young children to actually wait. But that is teaching them resilience. It's also teaching them patience. It's also teaching them respect for other people. And all of that is part of the skills that we need for emotional intelligence. It also helps with you know, self-regulation as well, because we have to manage ourselves in those situations where we're wanting to get into a space and we can't quite go there yet because it's, you know, it's already full.
So much of this research we had no idea about even a decade ago that's come to light now in relation to the neuroscience and developing children from the womb, basically, or conception. Yeah. Why is it so important to have these ideal situations or these support mechanisms in place from birth or before?
When we teach children or when we give birth to children, we don't really know the job that they're going to get when they're older, or whether they're going to be entrepreneurs or whether they're going to be, you know, independently wealthy, or, you know, we don't know that. So we have to give them this range of foundational skills, not only so that they can succeed academically, but also that so that they can succeed as a person. We want them to be able to relate to each other. We want them to be able to communicate. We want them to be happy, healthy, productive individuals. Because when children do grow up to be happy, healthy, productive individuals, then there's less strain on our health system, because not as many people are having mental health issues and or even physical health issues. There's less strain. There's less people going to jail. There's more people paying tax. There's a better community spirit. So, you know, it's in our best interests, if we want to look at it economically, to really put these foundational roots down for young children. It's also moving away from narcissistic habits as well. Many years ago, I read a book about children and the fact that everything revolves around children in families, and everyone's taking photos of the child. And I went to a childcare centre one time in Melbourne, and I was walking up the pathway, and the fence to the yard where the children were playing was next to the pathway. And I had my phone in my hand, and I was going there to talk to the teachers, and I was going to take some photos of the environment. But a child saw me and came running up to the fence and started to smile and said, "Are you here to take a photo of me?" Because he was so used to adults walking around with either iPads or phones taking photos of the children. I think it adds to the sense of maybe being special that all children are. But if it goes overboard, children feel like the whole world revolves around them, and they've already got enough of that developmentally. So they're already egocentric developmentally, and that's perfectly normal. But we don't want to build on that and add on that and that create children who turn into adults that think everything should be for them and around them. So when they have to move around our brain set classrooms, they have to negotiate with people. They have to share materials. They have to wait so that they can go into spaces. And it's giving them lifelong skills, as well as the academic skills that are factored into the spaces as well that the teachers design.
I learned recently from a teacher perspective, actually, that we are teaching children and getting them ready for careers, but not necessarily life. How do you think we could adjust the system, particularly because so much of it is the public school system, to ensure that children are being taught life skills?
Well, I think some of the things that I've already mentioned about the way the brain set operates, I think that does build the lifelong skills and the human skills, we call them too. And there's 23 human skills, by the way. But I also think teachers having a little bit more agency and being able to be, you know, more of themselves and having less regulations and less requirements to meet, so that they can just relax and be with the children and engage the children and allow the children to shine. I think that's important too. And that role modelling then for children is going to add to them building these human skills, because they're going to have a good role model. The other really important thing I think is to understand that not all children come from a stable home life, from no fault of their own. So it's part of our job as teachers, I think, to be that stable person and to model those good behaviours and to model how you handle conflict and how you think aloud. And when you make a mistake, you don't have to, you know, get really upset about it. You just say, "Oops, made a mistake. Let me try that again." We need to be role modelling the type of skill set that we want these children to have in their teenage years, particularly, and their adult years. And also remembering that their brains are so malleable. They're still learning. We have to remember too that the brain doesn't fully develop until we're about 28 years of age. And for men, it's slightly later than that. And I think that's just because the head is bigger, but we won't be going into that conversation. But it's a long journey. And we have this plasticity that sort of happens throughout the time. And it's the neural pathways that are being developed from before birth, And in the first 5 years of life, 90% of those neural pathways are developed in a child's brain. And then after that, we're just maintaining and pruning and adding and doing different things with the neural pathways. But it all comes back to the experiences the children have and the role modeling that the children have. That's also when we're setting up our own personal belief and value systems, how other people respond to us, how we're spoken to. That helps us get an idea of, oh, well, I'm a good person, or, yeah, I'm okay. People like me. You know, children get that understanding. We all have. We all have that understanding of who we are as people from those very early years. So the early childhood years, I think, are absolutely vital that we get it right and we allow children the opportunity to grow and thrive the best that they can, and we facilitate all of that. Rather than teach, I think we facilitate and guide children during those years.
I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, and I'd like to pursue a couple of the points you mentioned in there, but also another factor of humans and lifestyle, which is financial literacy. So I know that you work in that area too. Would you please come back as a guest in the next few weeks? That would be amazing.
Love to talk about financial literacy, because that links back to what I just said about the beliefs and the value systems that we all learn when we're young.
Dr. Catherine Murray, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to our next chat.
Wonderful, Kim. Thank you.
It never ceases to amaze me how much more there is to learn about life and learning. If you're interested to learn more about Dr. Catherine Murray and her work, you'll find links to Future Strong Education and Catherine's LinkedIn profile in the text of this episode's description. Please share what we teach our children with your friends, family, colleagues, anyone you think could benefit from these conversations. Next week, we meet Kayleen Askoff, who shares her story of raising two children and the role of modelling in the things she chose to use in her parenting toolbox and those she chose to change or adapt to make her own. This podcast is recorded at Launchpad Studios thanks to Split Spaces, a nest for new ideas.